Hi listeners, Jason here. This is a quick announcement to let you know that we'll be hosting our first ever Psych Health and Safety podcast live panel event on May 25 at 12:30 PM Australian Eastern Standard Time. The topic to be discussed is, Psych Health and Safety, is it time for a new approach to risk management? We'll be welcoming back previous popular guests including Ian Firth of Safe Work New South Wales, Jennifer Lowe of the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry, and Carla Kapanekia of the University of New South Wales. Our own Joelle Mitchell will also be on the panel. It'll be moderated by our first ever guest and OHS changemaker, Wade Needham. So head over to the Psych Health and Safety Podcast LinkedIn page to register for the event, and we'll see you then for what will surely be an excellent and thought-provoking conversation. Now, on to this episode.
From Flourish DX, this is the Psych Health and Safety Podcast. With workplace mental health becoming a safety prerogative, this is the source of information on psychological injury prevention and health promotion.
Hi, and welcome to the Psych Health and Safety Podcast. My name is Jason Van Shee, and I'm one of the hosts of the show. The aim of the podcast is to rapidly increase the knowledge and application of psychological health and safety in workplaces worldwide. To help with this, we have regular guests from around the world who are leading the way in this important area. But before I introduce our guest and topic for today, allow me to introduce my co-host, Joelle Mitchell. How are you today, Joelle?
I've had an earworm for the last few days. So my son recently discovered the Trolls World Tour movie, which involves lots of music from lots of different musical genres, which is great. But he's also discovered that there is a extensive Spotify playlist of all of the songs. So unfortunately, trolls just want to have fun, apparently. And yep. That's just been singing through my brain for the last few days. Yeah, there has been some fairly epic air guitaring happening at home as well, which has been pretty rad.
From you or Ronan?
From Ronan, yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't have pictured you for the air guitaring.
Not so much. I have done some daggy mum dancing, and Ronan thinks I'm really good. I'm like, oh, no.
Well, it's a limited sample size, I guess.
Very much so. He's just seen himself and his clumsy 7-year-old friends busting out their dance moves. So I'll take it while I can get it, I guess. But when I had a child, I certainly didn't think that the music I would have a problem with him listening to would be a rendition of a Cyndi Lauper song.
Fair enough. Well, when you said earworm, I thought it might be much more worse given your history, particularly over the last 6 months. So that's
no,
probably
not an actual physical worm in my ear. No.
No. No, I had a Star Trek kind of vision.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, look, great. Well, hopefully he moves into something, more of your taste.
I mean, there's some rock trolls in the movie, and yeah, that's all right.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I definitely think you'd be a good, I reckon, Nirvana, Placebo kind of emo type.
Grunge. I was all about the grunge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was the era, right? Like mid-90s. Yeah.
It was.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, this is not a music show. This is a Psych Health and Safety podcast. So what I want to do is introduce our guest. Mm. So after starting out as an employment and safety lawyer in Australia and the UK, she now works as a work health and safety consultant, trainer and speaker. Mm. She's recently founded her own company, Smart Culture, and specializes in enhancing workplace culture and safety and reducing psychosocial risks such as bullying and sexual harassment. Welcome to the podcast, Karen Ma.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure to be here today.
When
you were speaking about the daggy dancing, because I'm a bit of a, I've been there, done that, got the t-shirt, and I'm no good either, so it's all good.
White girls, we have to own it. We can't dance. I know,
that's it. We can do our best, but we are what we are.
Enthusiastic and bad.
That's it. 100%.
I don't even try anymore, so I can't say a thing. But Karen, really great to have you on. We've been trying. I think we first spoke about this when we first launched on LinkedIn, the idea that we're going to be doing a podcast, and you reached out. So glad that we finally found the time to get you on and talk about what you're doing.
Thank you so much. I think it's an amazing podcast, and it's really making a difference. It's such a key area, I think, for organizations, like you've both said, across the globe, really. And in Australia, certainly, I know that it's a really a big focus area for businesses at the moment, organisations of all kinds. So much needed information. So well done.
Thanks.
Thank you. Well, that leads us in to ask you about what your favourite podcasts are.
Okay, so my favourite podcasts are probably a little bit nerdy. I'm always sort of looking to learn a little bit more about, you know, get another little piece of gold that I can add into the work that I do. So they do tend to sort of stick around the leadership space and culture space as well, and safety space. So I like the Harvard Business Review one. I like, there's another new podcast actually called The Caring CEO that I've been getting into lately. And it's a friend of mine, Graham Cowan, who is one of the co-founders of Are You Okay? And yeah, it's just amazing just hearing from some really great leaders in Australia and just giving their ideas about how, you know, they've been so successful in their organisations too. And so again, I'm always sort of looking for little bits that I can continually improve my presentations and my work as well. And yeah, I find podcasts are pretty good like that, just to, you know, just listen in and just hear how other people operate. It's just fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. We're a fan of nerdy podcasts over here. So yeah, no judgment from us on that one.
Very good, very good. I feel at ease now.
All right. Well, tell us all about your professional career.
Okay, so I started as a lawyer back in 2003 in Australia and in Sydney, and I started in the employment and health and safety space. So at that time, they were sort of very different sort of topics. And I still remember one of my senior managing partners telling me, you have to choose, but I could never choose between the employment and safety side. So I kept moving along like that. Then I worked in the UK and I worked in a similar space over there as well. And as a lawyer again, and I just felt in that role, I was just in that reactive space all of the time. And I could see all of these things happening and, you know, safety incidents and the bullying and harassment cases where as a lawyer, you get involved at the end of the piece, you know, usually when everybody hates each other, you know, you might be preparing for court, it gets very expensive. People usually say things to you like, oh, it's really nice to meet you, but I hope I never meet you again. And I think that was hard, you know, also with investigations and inquiries. So after my time in London, I decided to move into consulting. And I spent some time in HR roles to try and work out a little bit more about what, you know, clients and organisations, the challenges that they face rather than from that legal point of view. And then when I came back to Australia, I worked for a safety consultancy that my brother owned. It's called The Brief Group, and did a lot of reviews and a lot of investigations and a lot of fatality investigations and a lot of bullying inquiries. And it really just led me to want to change what's happening and just really work with organisations to get them ahead of the game rather than always being on the back foot and always being in damage control and putting out these massive fires and people getting so hurt in the process. And so that just became a bit frustrating, I think. Just, yeah, I think it's been great experience to have that chance and that opportunity to understand what goes wrong and why. And so then I just really, in the last few years, have been shifting everything into the proactive and what can I do with my background and the hundreds of cases I've worked on and the reviews and everything, and really try to get organizations on the front foot in this space. And so, yeah, that's sort of what I really focus on now. So yeah, it's great.
Yeah. So you've been doing a lot of work to get smart culture up and running. And I believe you've just launched it or just about to launch it.
Yeah, just about. It's sort of, the website's live and it's all happening right now. Yeah, so that's all official really today. So very exciting. And yeah, the goal with smart culture is really to be a bit more positive about, you know, the learning experience, and rather than the bullying, harassment, compliance, training processes, it's more about how can we get people thinking a little bit more in that proactive area and making the learning a bit more positive as well. Yeah.
Yeah, great. So how do you do that through the Smart Culture platform?
So with Smart Culture, we have the online program. So we have two online programs, one for leaders and one for the employee level. And our goal is to just keep adding programs all around culture, really, in the safety space and psychological health and safety space as well. And yeah, so, and then we also have the face-to-face options too. But again, after I actually had a business before this, and I have had it for 10 years, and It was very compliance based, very much like, you know, this is bullying, this is what you have to do to avoid it. But now it's really, yet again, trying to make the learning a bit more of a positive experience and really talking a lot about the why, like giving people more context about why we need to shift our mindset and why we need to change to do this better, rather than, you know, just trying to wave the legal stick at people, which I don't think really works, to be honest. And it's great. Yeah, I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, no, we'll ask for the website at the end so that people can find out more about the solution that you've been working so hard on.
Beautiful. Thanks very much.
So obviously the media lately in Australia has been highlighting stories of workplace bullying and harassment, so it's sort of gaining a level of prominence in Australia in the last few years that it really hasn't seen before. Can you tell us about the state of workplace bullying in Australia?
Well, yeah, I think it's not good, that's for sure. We're in a pretty bad place, and I think the stats are, you know, we all see the research, they're not going down, the statistics and the incidence rate. I think that maybe there's a little bit more of a, I think that people are more willing to speak up a little bit more about bullying and harassment now, which I think is a good thing. But yeah, I think that we're not doing very well, if that's, you know, how we can encapsulate it in a nutshell. I think that we've always had huge problems, and I think now, yeah, people are willing to speak up a little bit more, which might be showing that maybe things look worse. But I think, yeah, in Australia, we've always struggled with this. We've always had, you know, some horrific cases, and we've always had a lot of damage going on. And but in the last, oh gosh, there's been so much, hasn't there, in the last few years, particularly obviously in the sexual harassment place as well. And we have a lot of work to do. That's what it's highlighted to me, that we're not there yet. We've still got to keep pushing and pushing and pushing to shift in this space.
Mm. So can you talk us through, so you've done, you know, lots of investigations and prosecution and court cases and that sort of thing. Can you tell us about the consequences associated with bullying for people?
Yeah, for sure. The consequences are sometimes catastrophic, and it's when I, you know, when we talk about in smart culture and all the work that I've done in the past, it's the personal cost is obviously, I think, the one that we need to focus on heavily. The personal cost is just, it's unbelievable. Like I can't even really put it into words sometimes, but even for the lower level types of bullying, or what we might call it lower level, where someone's maybe being a bit excluded or isolated or something like that, that can cause a lot of harm. With regard to, I guess, the investigations that I've worked on in the past and the claims, I don't think there's ever a case where there hasn't been a huge personal toll, all the way up to suicide. And so, yeah, it's unbelievable, really, how when we talk about how we all communicate with each other, and really it's, you know, we have to just do it a little bit better. But, it's incredible the damage that it can do. Like quite often I will see people with severe depression, severe anxiety. Quite often it's people who maybe haven't even had a history of these issues. And yeah, they go down so fast. And I think one of the really tricky parts is that we just don't have that magic reset button that we can push. You know, if they leave an organisation, to get them back to full health, it just doesn't work that way, does it? So, so usually what I tend to see, you know, with the investigations and the work that I do, you know, often people, their sleep suffers at the start. They start not wanting to come to work. They feel really anxious about coming to work. Their productivity goes down the tube. The morale in the organisation tends to go down the tube as well. There's so many different parts to it. I think even family breakdowns I see in my career, and that's just so hard because people are so focused on what's happening at work that it just sort of it causes a lot of havoc at home as well. So there's no end to it, really, as far as the personal consequences. Yeah.
What about for people who are accused of bullying?
Yeah, I think that often I would probably say they have similar types of issues, and again, it depends on the case, but often they will have, you know, they can have you know, like those sorts of like anxiety sort of type symptoms, and you know, the depression will creep in and people stop sleeping and things like that. I think there's just no winners, you know, there's no winners all around, and it can even affect anybody who's witnessing it, or, you know, people who are, you know, buddies with someone in the workplace or the leaders involved. Like, it's just, it's such a mess all around. There's no end to it, really.
What about it at like an organisational and society level?
So for an organisation, this is one of the things that, you know, one of our sort of, I guess our mottos really is that a good culture is good business, because there are no winners at all when we talk about if your culture is not going very well and those bullying behaviours are hanging around, that just absolutely smashes productivity. It smashes morale. It smashes... yeah, just communication, it just how people work together. You know, people aren't working together. It can also be really serious when we think about the sort of physical safety side as well. Often I talk about in our sessions about the link to bullying and how that fits in with safety, and obviously it's safety anyway, but I call it, there's something that I talk about being a high-risk worker, double whammy. So, you know, if we have somebody on a high-risk task and they're working away and they're, you know, trying to get their job done and obviously doing the risk assessment, then if they're being bullied or they're being treated poorly, then I would put to organisations that they're that's like a double risk, a double whammy, you know. So if they're trying to get their stuff done and they miss something that's critical on that risk assessment, or they're not sleeping, because that's, again, one of the first thing that goes, then maybe they are at a higher risk of not doing that work properly, and then all of a sudden we have that catastrophic event or outcome. Productivity always goes, the morale is a huge one. I think that obviously organisationally, the cost, human cost of, you know, employing people who, you know, obviously people just tend to leave when they're bullied. That's a big thing that I always see. People just hit the eject button, jump out. So rehiring people, the investigation costs, the legal costs, because, you know, there's a lot of people are more willing to speak up about it now. So ending up in tribunals, workers' compensation fees, premiums going up and things like that. There are just, I keep saying it, but it's true, there's no winners.
I think the safety links that you're making there sort of tie in with what Tim Marsh was talking about a few episodes ago, sort of his blue pie model. So, you know, the more that you've got on your mind, the less of your mind you've got available to pay attention to the job that you're doing.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think that when we're in, you know, even if we're driving, even if that's sort of our risky activity, and we're not on the ball and we're not sleeping and we're not coping very well, we are 100%, we're at a high risk. So there are so many reasons to do this well for everybody's sake.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Now, tell us, mid last year, as we were really starting to realise the true impact of COVID-19 and the impacts of the global pandemic, you chose to write an article about pandemic bullying. Yes. Now, what drove you to write that article?
Oh, so literally, again, I think because this is sort of my space, and I have, you know, a lot of, you know, clients who were struggling through the initial part of the pandemic, and I honestly didn't hear, like, every person I spoke to, it just felt like were giving me small stories about how they're struggling, and friends of friends. I have a lot of friends of friends who, you know, often get in touch with us. Say, can you please, you know, just have a discussion with my friend? They're really doing it tough. This is what's happening in their workplace. And just working with my clients as well. And they were talking about how, you know, the claims are going up and how people are really, you know, just not doing very well. And so I actually just coined the phrase pandemic bullying, because I could really feel that there was a bit of a difference between what I had been seeing previously and what was really happening. And a lot of that was around communication and people just not communicating with each other. And obviously there was a lot of fear. There was a lot of uncertainty. Organizations just sort of were flung into survival mode, really. And all of the nice to haves just sort of disappeared, and all of the values documents disappeared, and everybody was just struggling to keep their head above water. And when we do that, we're not focused on the safety and we're not focused on the respect part, you know, the natural consequence of that is that things aren't going to go very well. So, yeah, it was just so obvious to me that people were struggling. So I guess it was just a bit of an advice piece to try and get people to think a little bit more about how can we navigate this situation without this negative consequence, because it's hurting people. Yeah.
Yeah. No, completely understand, being a small business ourselves, you know, the pressures that the pandemic put on in terms of, you know, your plans, you know, your financial position, cash flow, all the rest, and communication for us at that point in time was so key. Just to let people know, hey, this is the reality. This is what we're doing to try and address it and keep you employed. And, you know, we're very fortunate not to lose anyone during the pandemic. You know, there's a lot of companies that, you know, didn't come out unscathed and obviously had an effect on everyone. And you can imagine managers being stressed and, you know, business owners being stressed and that just translating down into poor communication and people feeling that sense of bullying as well.
Yeah, and it's just like, it's just people not, I think you're on the money in how you just, I think probably a conscious choice to make sure you did continue to communicate. But what I was definitely seeing was the opposite, that I don't know whether organisations were trying to shield people from information, but the lack of communication put people into more of a spin. And then when you have all of that happening and then maybe someone, you know, it might be their wife or their husband or their, there's other stuff going on with people, then that just kind of took everything to another level. And even the changes in the workplace, everybody having to adapt so quickly, new safety measures that we have to be better at. And there was just so many bouncing balls that everyone had to navigate. And what people really needed was communication, but they weren't getting it. I think that was a big part.
So we're both very fortunate to be living in Australia during the pandemic. And as the world knows, Australia's handled the pandemic pretty well. If not, you know, right at the pointy end of those that are doing it the best, and the economy is doing well. And there's, I think, a lot of optimism now, obviously around the world, the vaccine's being rolled out as well. But it's been about a year now since you wrote that article. Do you think that pandemic bullying is still an issue?
Yes, I do. And I do. It's just, I think that there's still been a real problem around staying focused in this area, in this respect space. And also I think that combined with the fact that we weren't doing very well anyway in the psychological health and safety space, and then we had a pandemic thrown onto us, I think, yeah, the pandemic bullying, or the, as I've coined it, has still been a really big problem, and it is, you know, continuing to be a big problem as well. Yeah.
So are you talking about bullying specific to some of the changes that happened with the way that we do work? Or are you talking about the fact that obviously work-related stress, bullying, harassment was at record levels before the pandemic? So you're talking about pandemic-specific things here, what was happening before the pandemic?
So I think before the pandemic, we were maybe starting to, the lights were switching on a little bit in this space, and we were starting to get a little bit better with regard to psychological health and safety, and we were sort of slowly starting to look at it a bit more. And then the pandemic came and kind of just put a big explosion in there, and then everybody just went into survival mode. And so then it just, I think, made issues worse. So I think we've got the issues with, you know, as I said, people are adapting, trying to adapt to new processes, insecurities and things like that, and you know, people losing jobs and just so much change there. I don't know if I'm answering the question well enough, but I think it hasn't gotten any better, if that's sort of, I guess, the end. Yeah.
So what you're saying is obviously the state of work-related stress and bullying and harassment, that sort of thing, was pretty bad before the pandemic. Since the pandemic came along, it got worse with all the additional macro pressures, I guess, that were put on people. But we haven't seen an improvement since.
Yeah, I think that's, you put it in a nutshell for me. Thanks for that, Jason. And I think then we have the added sort of situation with, you know, all the thousands of Zoom calls and the pressure of working remotely, and that has been a really big issue too. So I think that's sort of a discrete new sort of area that we're seeing a lot of, where people just aren't communicating. So, you know, they're not having that opportunity where they're catching up and they're seeing each other. in the workplace anymore, because everybody's, well, not, you know, obviously not everybody, but in a lot of organisations I work with, there's a lot of the remote working going on. And so, you know, normally people were frustrated about something or something wasn't working quite, you know, as great as they hoped, and they would, you know, maybe catch up before a face-to-face meeting and they could have a little chat about something. But now, because everybody's sort of working in silos, that doesn't really happen. And then through all of the email correspondence as well, there's a lot of opportunity for things to get misinterpreted too. So I think that's the big area, that probably the biggest change that I've seen is that communication, and even just the etiquette, where people get themselves into a spin as well, because, oh, what did that mean? Or, you know, that's you know, how many emails they're getting a day, not being able to log off, and they're getting the expectations that they have to work late and all of that sort of stuff. So there's all of this additional, additional factors that we have to try to navigate. And I think that, yeah, we're struggling with those too.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. It's been a challenging time for people at all levels of organisations, I think. Lots of new challenges and challenges that's probably a bigger scale than we've seen in the past. You've worked with a lot of businesses and you've seen a lot of different strategies. What would you say are the typical approaches that businesses use to prevent and respond to workplace bullying?
So the typical strategies would be pretty basic, I would say, still. They might, you know, if they're at the upper end of where we want them to be, they'll have a policy, they'll have some leadership commitment to it, they'll have a process where people can make a complaint and that people know about it. And then, you know, that sort of process management system where, the complaints are managed pretty well. And I think now we're only just starting to shift and put that safety lens over the top, where some organisations are really starting to put in that risk management approach. And this is just so new to everybody. I think the majority of organisations that I work with, and again, sort of across the board in corporate, in elite sports, in construction, still pretty basic. You know, like if they've got a policy, they, you know, it feels like, oh, we've got the policy and that's sort of all we need to do, we're good to go. But usually no one knows about the policy, no one knows about the values, or nobody knows about, how it all connects up. No one knows what to do if there's an issue. And so that's where we run into problems. So, yeah, we've got the basics, but no one really understands anything about it. There's no awareness there. And so, yeah, when nobody knows the basics, nobody knows the awareness of them, then they struggle to consult with them and they struggle to take anything on board, and they just sit there and they don't know what to do. So then if issues are happening, then they continue to happen. And, there's just no, it's really the awareness piece, I think.
So it sounds like you're saying that those typical approaches probably aren't very effective as they currently stand.
Yeah, I think without having the proper awareness, without people understanding what this all means, without taking that safety risk management approach, where we are seeing some organisations do that a little bit better, then I think we're sort of swimming around in mediocrity, really. And, that's sort of where I guess the work that we do comes in a lot. Really trying to switch the lights on and say, hang on, it's not okay. Well, it's not okay. It's good to have a policy. Great, we have a policy. But if nobody knows about it, it's, you know, I always sort of say they're kind of worthless, and we might as well just, you know, wrap them up and use them as our bonbons at the Christmas party, because, you know, they're gathering dust. It doesn't, you know, if nobody knows about it, no one's going to follow it anyway. So, got to switch the lights on and get people to think a bit differently and start putting in processes and systems where people know what to do, you know. And when somebody comes to HR or somebody comes to safety, which is now obviously what we're pushing, isn't it, as well, we're trying, you know, pull safety and HR together a little bit more in this, and that they know how to respond to it, and that they do listen to people, and that they do actually, you know, take on board what they're saying. And, from a risk management point of view, also thinking about, okay, what happened here? Something was raised with us. We did the investigation. And then at the end, really pulling it apart and saying what went wrong, you know, just like we would do that normal root cause investigation for a traditional safety issue. If somebody fell off, at heights or something like that, we should be doing the same, and really pulling it apart at the end and how can we actually you know, what were the risks? How did we fall down? What can we do now to get ahead of the game and make sure that that doesn't happen again when we get to that time of year, or when we get to that Christmas party, or when, you know, we have a big, a stressful period at work? You know, how do we make it so people don't get so stressed that they start kicking off? Because that's, you know, they're humans and they can only take so much. So, yeah, there's a lot of work we can do in that risk management space that I think is really, really beneficial. And I think once organisations start looking, you know, they start putting the safety lens across these, you know, they really start kicking goals, which is really amazing to see.
So can you give us some examples of some of those risk management strategies that you've seen that have been effective?
Yeah, so one of the examples that I often use is a bit of a case study where I worked with a construction group and they had, you know, I think it was 16 bullying complaints. And it was over a period of a year. And so they were just like, what is going on here? And so, you know, we worked with them, did a review of the bullying complaints and looked into them and worked out that like 90% or 85% of the complaints were happening after 2 o'clock in the afternoon. But, you know, this is mostly during like the summer months. So people are really hot. So they're getting to 2 o'clock and they're tired. They've been, you know, their body's is fatigued. They also, they worked out that with regard to the safety management approach, that their hydration program was really limited as well. So people weren't hydrated. So here we are, we're sort of setting people up to fail, aren't we? They had really limited training in place. So nobody knew what was about bullying. Nobody knew what was okay and what was not okay. And so again, we're setting people up to fail. We're just sending them out and just hoping for the best. And so what they did is after they, after we did the review together, I should say, they did some training and they, you know, everybody started to understand a little bit more about what their duties are and that we have to take reasonable care for each other. What is bullying? What isn't bullying? Worked on the bystanders piece a little bit as well. And the leaders too, like what are their responsibilities to keep people safe when they're working out there, that it's not just about, making sure that, you know, the trenches are all safe and things like that. What about, you know, safe here as well? So, yeah, so after we went through that process, then they sort of took the approach where they raised the awareness, as I said, and then they started a hydration campaign. So everybody, you know, obviously weren't going through that that part of the day where they were just, their body was, you know, not coping very well. And there was a massive reduction. And I think it was like over the next 18 months, after they did that, there was like a 90% reduction in bullying complaints. And so they've just continued on with that. And obviously, and I know that I've heard you speak about it as well, this is not set and forget. We have to continually keep working on this and keep working on how do we set tasks up and we have to make sure we have enough people to do the tasks. And we have to make sure that they're hydrated. We have to make sure that they have rest breaks so that we're not, again, setting them up to fail, putting them into these positions where, you know, as a human, that's sometimes just, you know, that's how they react because they're just, they're stressed. So yeah, I think just really looking at it, like putting that safety lens on it, like how we would normally do a risk management, a risk assessment, how can we look at that and adjust our mindset a little bit and put the psychological health and safety part in there as well. You know, we know bullying is a psychological health and safety issue. We know it's a hazard. How can we get ahead of the game and think about, you know, do we have enough people? What is the task that we're doing? You know, have we had any history before where this hasn't gone very well? What can we do to sort of eliminate or control those issues at the start rather than just kind of keep on getting at the end where we have another complaint, you know, and everybody's struggling and, so again, just trying to be as proactive as we can.
I really like that approach of looking at some of the organisational causes that sort of contribute to that bullying behaviour as well, because I think a lot of the time in the bullying space, we really just focus on the individual who's doing the bullying.
Yeah.
And train people in, well, this is bullying and you shouldn't do it. But I like that, yeah, that you really took that step back and said, well, what are some of the contributing factors that might be pushing people to a point where they start to engage in that behaviour? And yeah, I mean, hydration, if you're dehydrated, you're pretty cranky, you're not thinking properly. So yeah, all of those sorts of factors, I think that's great that you you did take that step back and look at those contributing factors. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I think one of the key, another motto that I really follow in the work that I do, and I think comes from the safety background and, you know, that those traditional sort of safety investigations where, you know, like things go wrong for, you know, we might lose somebody at work. Like, what went wrong? There was always a reason. There were always sort of something behind it. And yeah, adjusting our thinking. And I've worked a long time, and he's my brother, but he's one of the most, you know, the best safety consultants in Australia. And he always talks about getting curious before furious, you know, when something goes wrong. And I push that a lot, you know, like somebody kicks off in a meeting, like, why are they kicking off? Yes, the behavior is not okay, but if we get curious before we get furious about it, and we ask the question and we support them, then there might be a very big why. And that's what we need to really get focused on as well. And if we can do that, then hopefully we prevent the fallout from happening again. And then we also obviously talk about the fact that it's not okay to behave like that. But then again, we're sort of, we're really actually getting to the issue. So hopefully we can prevent it from happening again rather than just putting out fires all the time, which is what I see a lot.
Mm. Yeah, it's sort of a bit like the, you know, the movement away from the bad apple approach in safety. Mm-hmm. But when we're talking about interpersonal issues in the office, the focus is still very much on the bad apple and not looking at the barrel.
Yeah, and I think there is definitely an element of bad apple, and I think, you know, that it's a personality trait sometimes, and sometimes it's just historical, or that's the way we do it here, or we hear that a lot. That's the way it is. That's, if you don't like it, you have to go. This is, you know, this is the sort of that old school sort of mentality still around a lot. I see that, but yeah, 100%. If we take that approach where we just have to ask questions and consult with people and find out what is actually the issue, you know, maybe people are just so stressed that they're breaking. And so, again, I keep saying it, but we're human, aren't we? And so we can only take so much. And I think, you know, we all have that that threshold that if we're just pushed too far, that things start falling down. So we always want to try to catch people before we get anywhere near there. And that's an organisational, I think that's an organisational responsibility.
Mm. Yeah, I love it. Probably the org psych background coming out in me, but yeah, looking at the systems rather than the individuals, so much more powerful and so much better for prevention, as you say. Otherwise, you're just stamping out fires all the time if you're trying to just deal with it by individual or case by case. But one of the things you also spoke about there was bystanders, right? So for colleagues who are actually witnessing bullying, what are some of the tools or strategies that they could be using?
So, bystanders is just a huge emerging area in Australia now, isn't it? And it's very effective and very powerful. And so the goal is that, you know, we do something. So that's going to depend on what's happening, on the circumstances, because, you know, it depends on the relationships between people, whether they will feel safe to say something and call it out if they're seeing something of some kind of poor behaviour. So the goal is to do something. If they feel safe to call it out, call it out. You know, this is not okay. I don't agree with what you're saying. Things like that. You can be saying things to try and stop the behaviour at the time. And if we don't feel safe, then we can always do something, even if it's after the event. We can speak up about it after the event. We can go and speak to the person that's sort of been through who's being affected. Ask them, are you okay? I didn't really agree with what happened. Can I support you? Things like that. We can also do we try to keep it very practical when we talk about bystanders and even little tactics like distracting at the time. So we might not feel confident, say we're in a situation where someone's kicking off in a toolbox talk. Maybe we can say, all right, let's just move on to the next topic or let's take five, you know, let's have a circuit breaker, or there's all those terms, isn't there? And so at least what happens is someone's stepping in and doing something, and it stops what's happening at the time. And then it gives everybody time to think about what's happened. And then hopefully we can resolve it a little bit further down the track if we can't stop it fully at the time. So the really big goal is to do something. So even if they're, you know, you might even after the event raise it with a leader, you know, speak with another supervisor, and just, you know, if they weren't in the meeting or they weren't in, you know, around the incident at the time, you can say, you know, this happened today and I'm a little bit concerned about, you know, both of the people involved, you know, maybe can you check in with them? So then what we've done is we've not just let it go. You know, as I think traditionally in Australia, we've done a lot of letting go, and we see something and it makes us feel uncomfortable and we don't feel confident because we don't know if we're going to be supported, or, you know, we don't know if we speak up, whether we're going to cop it or be victimized for that. We have done something and we've taken that step so that at least we can push it up, and then a leader can step in and have a conversation and, you know, get to the bottom, get curious before they get furious about it, find out what happened and support people. And hopefully, you know, even if they're being clear about what the expectations are, you know, I understand that this is what happened, but you do, you know, that wasn't an appropriate way to speak to someone in a meeting, and we can't have that. So let's work on what the issue was, and then we try to get to the bottom of that, like we spoke about just earlier, and then hopefully we've moved the bar up, we've shifted the bar upwards, because, you know, people know it's not okay. You know, it's not going to be okay to keep doing that in the toolbox talks. It doesn't matter what's happening. And I think the really big part of the bystanders piece is making sure that leaders really get it and really understand it from a senior point, because if they don't, and we're empowering people to do that and to speak up, and the leaders aren't on board with that, it can be a bit damaging, because if they're not sort of listening and they're not taking action, then your bystanders won't feel supported. So yeah, first step is really getting your leaders on board, and then really sort of educating, you know, everybody else, the employee level, so that, you know that if they speak up, that they can do that confidently and that they will be supported and that it will be stopped. So yeah, a few parts to that, but yeah, again, we try to keep it pretty practical. So yeah.
Yeah. I really hope with the bystanders piece, it doesn't go down the way of peer support or mental health first aid, where that's kind of our first line of defense. It's all right. We've got, you know, colleagues out there, employees out there, they can support it or they can stop it, you know, happening. Mm-hmm. And the employer goes, well, we've done our bit because we've enabled our employees to deal with this themselves. How do we stop that?
So, I mean, I think that the education piece is enormous. I think that without that, again, we're only sort of getting better at the bystanders piece really in the last few years. And so I think if our even all the way up to your senior leadership team, if they don't actually understand what are the benefits of having active bystanders, what does that all mean, how do we support active bystanders, if we don't do that education piece, it's just that is what will happen. You know, it just will be absolutely ineffective. And so even with the work that we do, we talk about that, and with the online programs, part of that onboarding process is explaining that. It's explaining this is what we talk about. And so as part of taking this on, you're taking that on. And so it's sort of like we're kind of saying you need to be doing this better. Otherwise, we're going to be training everybody to speak up, and we don't want them to be let down when they do that, because it's a huge deal. So yeah, the goal is that they do something, that they are supported, and that whatever's happened, that we can even, again, go back to that risk management approach, go back and fix it. You know, why were people kicking off, or, you know, how did we get to that point? And then the leader says, this is not okay. And then we keep talking about what's okay and what's not okay. Keep having conversations about, you know, maybe it's racism, or, you know, maybe it's, you know, that sort of sexual harassment or the racial harassment or all of those types of things. It's never set and forget. We have to keep educating people about, you know, what's okay and what's not okay. Yeah.
And I think you're kind of alluding to it there as well. The bystander piece doesn't just sit on its own. You don't just train, you know, all your employees on how to intervene if they see something that's not okay. You have to still think about the root cause of these behaviors, and you have to think about policy, and you have to think about senior leadership commitment, and you have to think about training up your managers and line managers and all the rest. So it's just one element, right? And we have to do all of it together in order to be effective in prevention.
Yeah, that's so true. It's just, we can't sit in silos. We have to sort of understand what it's all about, and it all fits in with the respect piece. It all fits in with the safety piece. You know, it all fits in with, you know, we have to sweat small stuff. So we have to be teaching people, you know, if they see things and it might be early days, and if we don't do something early, if we don't understand that we might say one thing that's so powerful that it stops the behaviour from continuing, then we might stop the behaviour from escalating, getting worse, and really hurting people as well, if it, you know, if it kind of keeps, if it's ongoing. So
yeah, as long as we don't put all of the responsibility on the shoulders of peers in the workplace and employers kind of wash their hands of it, I think that's important.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, we need to make sure the organisations are on board with it and that they support people. And again, that we're being really clear about expectations from the very start as well. So that's awareness piece, and that being clear on expectations is the start. Yeah, and then the bystander piece, it all kind of fits together as a solution. It can't be, yeah, like you said, it can't sit by itself. Yeah.
Well, you've given us lots of information. Do you have any sort of key tips or takeaways for employers who want to do better in this space?
I think that in this space, what we really push is the practical piece, and about being, we have to be authentic about the fact that bullying exists, that, you know, harassment exists, racial harassment and all of that exists. And authentic, you know, that we know it's a known risk. And so how do we actually commit to it and to do a better job? So that's sort of that authenticity part. So understanding it, turning up the dial, we always sort of talk about it with regard to psychological health and safety, and really starting to take that risk management approach will take you leaps and bounds ahead of so many organisations right now. I would say 90% of the organisations that I work with at the moment still aren't doing that. We're not looking at this with a safety lens. And once we do, it's easier. You know, we get the buy-in. You know, this is, if people are going to work and they're being bullied, they are not safe. If they're being harassed, they're not safe. And so why aren't we using that approach? So that's what I would say. Go back to your systems. You know, are we really covering psychological health and safety? You know, how can we ramp that up and turn up the dial there and really make sure that we are, you know, in how we talk about it in our policies, in our processes, in our safety rules and things like that? I think that's a big part. I think also the education piece is enormous, because people just won't know what they don't know. And, you know, people need to understand that they have legal duties to each other, you know, to take reasonable care for the health and safety of each other. And that applies here. And often when we work with organisations and people understand that, that sort of turns the lights on a little bit in this space too. And I would also say, you know, have a really good look at your reporting process and do whatever you can to make it easy, make it, you know, it, make your reporting process something that people can access, you know, have different people that people can report issues to, not just that one person. Yeah, just make it something that is doable for, you know, if you think about, try to put yourselves in the shoes and consult with your people. How would you report it? How would you want to report it? You know, a lot of organisations are looking at anonymous channels for reporting issues, because people are generally fearful to report issues like that. So I would say reporting process and then consultation. You know, don't try to sort of make up all of the rules and all of the ideas without asking people. We have the duty to consult anyway. So, you know, spending time and committing to that means asking questions. You know, how can we do this? How can we do this better? How can we sort of improve in this space, in the respect space? If people are fearful to report, why are they fearful to report? And then start from the other side, from the risk management point of view, how can we start, you know, really improving and enhancing our systems? I think that would be my, it's at five tips. Yeah, just to get on, you know, to really start shifting. And if we don't get overwhelmed and we have a bit of a plan in place to sort of just start ticking things off, it will make a massive difference. And I'd see that all the time. So I think that's a key one.
Thank you. And I like that you've given some suggestions sort of across the spectrum, from prevention through to sort of response and recovery and sort of continuous improvement. So, some good touch points across that whole spectrum of risk management.
Excellent. Yeah, it's never set and forget, that's for sure, is it? And I know I've heard you both speak about that, that we can't just sort of put this in place and hope for the best, because that's just, hope's not a strategy. So yeah
it's all about continuous improvement, that's for sure. Yeah. Now, Karen, after taking a slight kind of detour early in your career with law, you've obviously now embraced workplace health and safety and workplace mental health and psych health and safety. You've seen a bit over the last, you know, couple of decades. So what are your futures? Also, what are your hopes for the future with workplace mental health?
So, I mean, I probably the biggest kicker out of, you know, the work that I do is just seeing organisations start to switch onto this and to start, you know, I worked with an organisation literally last week who just hadn't seen any of the bullying harassment piece as part of a safety sort of type issue. And by the end of the session, they had the biggest to-do list about what they were going to do for workers who were in a remote location, and that they were actually just sort of switched onto that. So I guess, yeah, me looking towards the future is just continuing to really, I guess, shift mindsets in this space and really work with organisations to help them get ahead of the game and help them to understand the why behind it and to actually help them to implement the systems as well, so they're not just like, you know, they're being trained on it and then they get all excited about it and they know that, okay, yeah, we need to do this, but then it's about helping them actually get it done as well. Yeah, I think that's probably it really. Just I get pretty excited about it, and I do sound a bit nerdy when I say this, but you know, when you walk away from an organization who just weren't looking at these issues as safety issues, and then they start to, and those lights turn on, it's pretty awesome. And you know, quite often I see things, even if it's on LinkedIn, and I'll see something that an organization that I know, they just weren't really thinking about it like this before, but I can see initiatives that are pulling through. It's just, yeah, it's really rewarding, I think, this work.
Yeah, no, you're doing great work, and I totally agree. There's nothing more satisfying than seeing the lights come on for those, yeah, those clients. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that leads us through nicely into our next question, which is, do you have any words of advice for practitioners who want to work in the area of psych health and safety?
I think that I would say that it is, just coming off the back of the last question, is it will be really rewarding for you, because there is a huge gap in Australia and we need you so much. So I think that, you know, if you can, we just don't have, like I was talking to a client the other day and I was saying, well, you know, we really do need that sort of safety approach where, you know, people understand the HR side too. And yeah, there's a huge gap there. I think it is really rewarding. And I think that I think just really trying to get, as far as advice goes, trying to get that experience working with as many different types of organizations as you can, and just asking the questions and really doing that legwork will get you far, I think, so that you can understand what their challenges are. And I think that's sort of how my career flowed. Like that's what I did in the middle, where I really worked with organizations to understand what the issues were a lot more. Yeah, I think that's probably it really. Yeah, very needed. And yeah, I think that you really make a huge difference in Australia, and it's just such a hot area. We're desperate, aren't we? We're desperate in this space. We really need, you know, we really need the resources, and we really need people who understand this area to really keep pushing organisations to, you know, go to the next level, and we're just not there yet. Yeah.
Good advice. Thank you, Karen.
You're welcome.
Yeah, well, Karen, it's been a blast having you on. Really love the lens that you look at bullying and harassment through, you know, far different to the traditional approach or the popular approach up until now, and really hope that people have taken a lot out of this episode. I definitely have. You've obviously just launched, as of today, the recording day for this podcast, your Smart Culture website and solution. Where can people find out more about that?
So the website is www.smartculture.com.au. So you can find all about Smart Culture there, and the programs and the strategy sort of work that we're doing as well. And I also do sort of keynote speaking as well. So I've got a Karen Ma website too, if anyone's interested in that sort of side of it. And yeah, that's it. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure and great to be on the podcast. think it's an amazing podcast, and I think you're doing really such an important piece, and I can really see the momentum that you're getting, and so that's fantastic. Keep going.
We'll have to have Karen on again.
Bill,
yeah. Keep going.
Yeah. Awesome, Karen. Well, thank you so much. So that brings us to the end of the show, listeners. So don't forget, we do video these things over Zoom and launch them on the Flourish DX YouTube channel. So you can see the studio and Karen if you go to there. If you don't like the long format, if an hour is too long for a podcast show or a YouTube video, we do little snippets, 2 to 4 minutes, that we put on the Flourish DX LinkedIn page. So check them out. Joel and I are very active on LinkedIn as well. You'll definitely see that if you're on there. So feel free to reach out to us. We're always happy to chat. And you can get in touch with Karen through the Smart Culture website or through LinkedIn as well. But thanks a lot, listeners, and we will catch you next episode.
You've been listening to the Psych Health and Safety Podcast. To stay up to date with the latest on psychological injury prevention, follow Flourish DX on LinkedIn and subscribe to the Psych Health and Safety Podcast at www.psychhealthandsafety.com.